This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
We get the best start to the day because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
Tempers are hot here, but it's funny because the Panthers, it was so exciting and so good and such the antithesis of what we saw at the Kaseya Center, but something about that Heat game last night just has everyone on edge. You have been watching them, Will, for the longest time, and you've been around the organization for years. You've never seen anything like this before, right? Where the team seemingly tapped out before it began.
Yeah, it was, the word quit, you don't use the word quit because you would think as professional athletes, and certainly this core, that they're not quitting. But I thought what Niko Jovic said after the game was pretty telling, and he said, you know, when we lost that game too, it kind of took our competitive kind of will and spirit out because we thought we were so close. And then once game three started to get away from us, I just think mentally we weren't ready for it. You know, and whether that you want to call that quitting, I don't think that's quitting, but I think it is kind of seeing where this is going and maybe not being able to put your best effort forward. And I'm not even sure the Heat's best effort forward was going to get a win against this Cleveland team. You got to give credit to the Cavs. But, I mean, there's one thing, guys, to give credit to a better team. There's another thing to lose by 55 points.
And Will, like you're saying, it was 21, and then game two was a 9-point loss, which is funny, where a 9-point loss is what it is, and then 37 and 55. Like, does it mean more as you see those deficits and one 122 point deficit in the series, which on ESPN they were talking about today, where like that's one of the biggest deficits in NBA history. Does it really make the Heat reset?
Yeah, I think you have to kind of look at it because the things that they preached down the stretch were relevant. Like, hey, we don't quit. Our culture is about moving forward. You got to be proud of the guys for finding a way to win two road games, being the first 10 seed to earn an 8 seed and make the playoffs. I get all that. All that is true. But then you get to that position where you have to, you know, play one of the best teams in the league and you get embarrassed. And that's another thing. I heard the word embarrassed way too many times in the last, 72 hours since game three. Bam used it after game three. Spo, who I remember one time years ago, I used the word embarrassing in a question to Spo, and he stopped me. And he's like, no, I'm not embarrassed. And for him to use the word embarrassed last night tells you how bad it was. So, yeah, I think it kind of dampers any good that came out of that late push and, making the playoffs, gets it eliminated right away when you lose like that.
Yeah, if I have to hear about that plane ride one more time, Will, I'm going to pull my hair out. I mean, we got it. It was meaningful. No, but seriously, Will, yesterday, I know the conversation immediately shifts to the front office. I get it. And there's clearly some blame that deserves to go up there. And to Coach Spo, it was not perfect this year. I get it. There's some blame that has to go there. But how much blame do Tyler and Bam deserve as the two best players? And how does this change the future with them, not in terms of are they, no longer tradable. My point is they're the two best players on this team. They're the all-stars. They're the guys who were chosen to be the next pillars of the organization, and they just suffered the two worst losses in franchise playoff history in back-to-back consecutive nights to get swept only for the third time ever in franchise history. That has to mean something.
It does, and I think it goes beyond just these two games. Look, when you see past these two games, which were horrendous, obviously, and record-setting for all the wrong reasons, you have to still see a team that this year was sabotaged by the Butler situation. And the Jimmy situation, whoever you want to blame in it, we've talked about it plenty on this show. That's not the point who you blame. It was ugly from the start. It was never going to end well this season. But Bam and Tyler, to your point, as the leaders, had to take on that responsibility as leaders and on the court. For the most part, they played well. But in the key games against quality opponents and trying to close games, all those blown leads in the fourth quarter, they didn't find a way. You have to turn to your leaders. You can't just be leaders and all-stars in the good. You have to be in the bad, too, and you have to be able to take that criticism. And I think it's fair. I think when they handed it over to them post-Jimmy, it didn't go well. It just didn't. And they fought hard in the end. Again, you go to that. But when you end like this, it does make you question a bit, okay, how do they fit as the core? Who needs to get added or who needs to get subtracted to this core to make it work moving forward?
And Will, with and today on ESPN, you know, when a series ends, everybody talks about it. And they were talking about this might be Pat Riley's last ride.
No.
Do you think Pat can continue the next build, the Giannis out of Milwaukee thing? Like, you know, we hear all the rumors. Do you think this is Pat's last build coming up, or you think this is Pat's ending? This is his swan song.
No, I think, look, I mean, Pat's 80 years old. So, I mean, how God bless him, man. He's an icon. He is Miami Heat basketball, and there is no Miami Heat basketball without Pat Riley. So you have to give him his flowers and say what he's done for this organization. You also have to give him the respect to understand that Pat's going to go on his own terms, as he should. Mickey Arison, no one in that organization, Nick Arison, I can confidently say, is telling Pat Riley, there's the door, you need to get out. Pat is going to get out when he wants to get out. My feeling has always been that Pat wants to see this through post-Jimmy for at least a couple more years. And who knows, depending on how he's feeling, and he's feeling great, thank God for his health. But I think when you look at this organization, people sometimes put too much on Pat, don't understand, this is collaborative. I mean, Pat and through the Arison family, they built this base with the names I just mentioned, and Andy Ellisberg, and Adam Simon, and obviously Spo, Alonzo Mourning's part of that brain trust. They have a room where people sit, led by Pat, that makes decisions. And they're going to get in that room, and they already have, you know, since yesterday, and they're going to continue to figure out what's next. And Pat's going to be a big part of that. And how people don't understand that or want it to be different, I can't fathom, because, again, Pat has earned that ability and that respect to try to fix what is going on right now.
But, and we had this conversation, Jimmy Butler seems to be correct, right, after you watched last night. Because what I was saying to Solana and Crowder was, Jimmy Butler essentially said, hey, take your motivational pep talk at the end of the season and take the books that have meaning that you give out. Throw it all in the garbage. Get me players better than Bam and Tyler. And or give me my money. One of the two. Like, throw your books and your motivational speeches away. Give me my money or better players. And Pat Riley didn't do either. And Jimmy kind of showed you last night that, hey, I think I was right here.
I mean, look, Jimmy has showed us for 5 years that he was right. Jimmy showed that he's a playoff. There's a reason they call him Playoff Jimmy, right? I mean, there's a reason he has that title, and we saw what he's done here. We didn't need to see it in Golden State. What he did last night was nothing different than what we saw for five seasons. Two finals, three Eastern Conference finals. I mean, we saw that Jimmy. The issue with Jimmy goes beyond that, though. And again, I hate bringing it up, but it is part of this story. I mean, Jimmy and Pat, it ran its course. The contract stuff was certainly an issue, but let's not forget that before the contract stuff, they didn't want to offer him a contract extension for a reason. That ship had sort of sailed, and maybe one day we'll be able to pull back and get the real reasons. You know, Jimmy always said, oh, I'm going to tell the real story one day. Maybe Pat's going to be in time, and we can find out more of what the real reason was. But there was a disconnect that went beyond just basketball with Jimmy. The way he did things, the way his attitude, his perspective, obviously his availability, those are things that I think ran sour with Pat and the organization, and they moved on. Was it the right choice? Of course, when Jimmy's having success in Golden State, it looks bad. But we saw that success. We know what Jimmy can do. They were just ready to move on.
Well, what do I tell my daughter and son that watched the game last night? Because I couldn't tell them the Heat gave up, but it seems as if the Heat gave up. Like, What's your explanation? Give me your father. I'm a father. What do I tell my kids about last night?
I think, you know, the only thing you can tell from a parental standpoint, which I guess works kind of as a coach too, is that even when things are going south and going bad, you've got to push forward and keep a frame of mind that you're going to do your best. And Davion talked about, someone asked him, like, hey, was anything said at halftime when you go in and you're down 40 points? And Davion's like, look, we knew we weren't going to win. It's not like they said, oh, we're going to make a comeback, chip away. We're going to be silly like that. But we said we have to play with some pride. And I think that's the message, right? Like, when you're getting your ass kicked and when you're playing poorly and you're not playing well and everything's going wrong, you still have to try. And there were times in that game where it feels like the Heat just conceded, you know? And again, you want to use the quit word, go ahead. I don't think they actively quit. I just think it was that feeling of defeat and that helpless feeling, my God, we are getting murdered here. There's nothing we could do. That the body language, the hustle, everything looked bad basically from about the middle of the first quarter on.